So I hope you've all been able to follow what I've said so far, and I hope it's sort of you can see what we're trying to get at. So we talk about the butter lamp as being the correct example. Tumpe, another similar example, that's what they call it, a similar example. You have your sign, your syllogism, using big words here, syllogism, sorry. A reasoning. So you have a subject, the sound. What you're trying to prove about the subject is impermanence. So that's what we're trying to, actually get at, realize at this sort of subtle level. When we say impermanent there, you understand subtle impermanence. Because it's a product, then you have a reason why that quality is true of the subject. So the reason is what persuades you, establishes that more obscure phenomena. So, of course you've got to ascertain that sound is a product, and then you've got to have the second ascertainment, what we call the pervasion, is that if it's a product, it's necessarily impermanent. You've got to see the connection there. And that's more difficult in this case. That's the hard bit of this particular reasoning. And to help us, they use this similar example, which is the last moment of the butter lamp, or the last moment of the flame. So that's a similar example. So you can work it out. If it's a product, it's necessarily impermanent. You work it out on that example. So that's the easier example. So then you can go to say, now sound is also like that. So that's what I was saying with the smoky kitchen and the smoky hill, the smoky pass. In the smoky kitchen, it's much easier to see that smoke depends upon fire, that fire is essential to the production of smoke. So then you can take it away then and use it in other situations where it's not so obvious, when you can only see the smoke. So that's the idea of the similar example. But you can see that's going to cause problems, isn't it? How do you realize if it is produced, it is necessarily impermanent? That's quite challenging. Did we have the example of the swan last time, didn't we? If it's a swan, is it necessarily white? Well, if you lived in this country, you might think so. But those of us who've been to Australia or London Zoo or somewhere. Are there any black ones in London Zoo? Are they? Anybody seen a white crow? I've seen a white crow. That was in India, down cellar. Seemed quite happy with all its friends, but it was just white. Yeah, so, it's got to have, there's got to be some sort of inviolable relationship. If there is smoke, there must be the fire to produce it. So anything that is a product, is it necessarily impermanent? So you've got to work on that. So that then the objections come in the next section, dispelling objections. See, somebody's questioning whether, you can make a reasoning like this. So that they're trying to pick holes in our setup. So I'll let them try. So we'll just read a bit of that. It might get a bit technical for some of us, but it's just to show that it's not sort of completely cut and dried. And to spend a lot of time studying these things in the monastic sort of philosophy course. So it's not like it's all just done in a weekend course. So what about this person who raises an objection then? Just let's look at least one objection and see if it gets us more familiar with the project that we're trying to do to realize this subtle subject. So well then, does the correct party, who is a person to whom the syllogism is set, so that's just the person who you're saying the syllogism to, you're giving the reasoning, they're imagining it to be in a case where you're reasoning with somebody else. So you're trying to present our own system to another person. So that's the other party, the correct party, who's ready to realize impermanence but hasn't done so yet. So they're asking then, does this correct party, who is the person who's ready to hear the syllogism, is ready to work on the reasoning, does that person realize that the butter lamp that is about to go out is impermanent or not? Fair enough. Well, that's a fair enough question to ask. So they haven't realized that sound is impermanent because they're the person who's going to listen to the reasoning and then realize that sound is impermanent. Right? And in fact, this is supposed to be a sign for somebody newly realizing impermanence. So they've never realized impermanence before on any subject. Subtle impermanence. So, you know, how can they realize subtle impermanence on the butter lamp first? Aren't they supposed to realize that sound is impermanent? Isn't that the first subject that realize impermanence on? You know, so there's genuine debates here. So then that's what the opponent's questioning. Does this syllogism, does this correct party who hasn't realized that sound is impermanent, is going to realize that sound is impermanent and thereby realize impermanence for the first time, does he realize that the butter lamp is impermanent or not? He or she. So if it doesn't realize that the butter lamp is impermanent, then how are you going to have established this pervasion? If it is a product, it is necessarily impermanent. That's what the butter lamp is for, is for realizing that pervasion, you know, for gaining confidence in that. If it is a product, it's necessarily impermanent. So that's where you bring the butter lamp in to meditate on that. But if it doesn't realize even the butter lamp is impermanent, then you know, how can he realize that if it's a product, it's necessarily impermanent? So if he doesn't realize that the butter lamp is impermanent, then how can he realize the pervasion? And if he doesn't realize the pervasion, then the sign won't prove anything to him because there's a bit left still undone. So then it wouldn't be a correct sign for that person. He wouldn't realize the pervasion. He wouldn't realize if it's a product and it's impermanent. So then he hasn't realized, how can he realize sound is impermanent then? Because he hasn't completed the parts necessary, the preparation necessary to do that. So that's one problem, if he doesn't realize that sound is that the butter lamp is impermanent. But on the other hand, if he does realize that the butter lamp is impermanent, what then? So then it's still unsatisfactory. So if this other party, your opponent, if he does realize that the butter lamp is impermanent, is that a direct realization? Or is that a realization by means of a sign, by means of a reasoning? So there's the two possibilities. Either he realizes it with direct perception, or he realizes it in dependence upon a reasoning. So then the problem is, if it is the former, if he realizes it through a direct realization, then he's saying that party would be a superior being. Now, a superior being, that's a special technical meaning of somebody who's realized, you know, gotten onto the path of seeing, somebody who's realized emptiness directly, so a very high level of realization. You know, first of all, you realize these things through correct signs, meditate on the sign, and gradually, slowly, you meditate to the point where you have a direct realization of these things. You know, this is very much the way our system, our sort of school, the Gelugpa school of Tsongkhapa followers, they're always insisting on this one. It's a hidden phenomena. First of all, you realize it through a correct reasoning, and then meditating on the reasoning again and again, you know, sort of persistent, you know, get yourself sort of a calm abiding, you know, direct single point of concentration, meditate, and then gradually the conceptual image wears away, and then you're seeing your phenomena, your emptiness or your impermanence just directly, not with your eye consciousness, but with a direct mental consciousness. So that's a very high level of seeing, very high level of realization. So that's not likely that this person who's just, you know, trying to realize impermanence for the first time should realize that the butter lamp is impermanent just with direct perception, direct mental perception. That's something that just ordinary beings don't have. It's only cultivated through, you know, lots of concentration and wisdom. So that's not very likely, but so either you realize it that the butter lamp is impermanent through direct realization, direct perception, or you realize it in dependence upon a sign. But then, if the latter, then as above, it would not be correct as a reasoning which newly establishes impermanence, because, you know, if it's a reason which newly establishes impermanence, you're realizing impermanence upon sound. Sound is impermanent because it's a product. So if you knew, if that's a correct reason to newly realize impermanence, it would be realizing impermanence on sound. But if you've already realized impermanence on the butter lamp, then, you know, there's no reason to talk about, oh, sound is impermanent. You know, so that's a kind of a fault then. That sound is impermanent because it's a product is not a correct reason to newly establish impermanence, because you know by the time you've got the person ready to realize impermanent sound, they've already realized it on something else. And if they realize the butter lamp's impermanence, independent upon a sign, well then, you know, how are they going to realize do they need another similar example? How are they going to realize the butter lamp's impermanent? Don't they need another similar example that they realize impermanence on that before they realize it on the butter lamp? You know, so they're raising all these objections. Of that subject, yeah. So then you've got this problem of, you know, regression or something, you know. Yeah. So that's a puzzling question, you see. So that is a tricky question, and we debated about that for ages. And the teachers never tell us the answer; they just left us to debate about it for ages, and I never understood. Properly, you had all these weird ideas coming up, but you know, if we go on to Gelinrimba's answer, you see, he's trying to give us the answer according to how he sees it. Let us explain that the example is manifestly impermanent, right? So the example is something you can see very readily is impermanent. When you see that light going to dark. Yeah? So it's very easy to see the last moment of the butter lamp is impermanent. You know, you can see it's just about to go out and it's dying down. And, you know, there's no more fuel left. You know, you can see all these things. So you can see that the flame is just about to go out. So that's manifest impermanence. That's impermanence, which is, you know, the mind can ascertain it just from the information it's getting from the sense consciousness. You can think, oh, now that's impermanent, you know, that's about to go out, that's just, you know, going to vanish in the next instant. So the mind can think all those things just from the information it's getting from the sense consciousness. See, so there isn't a reason needed to see that the butter lamp's impermanent, the last moment of the butter lamp. So you don't need to depend upon a sign. So although he directly realizes it, you know, he just from the information he's getting from his sense consciousnesses, there is no fault of there's no fault of it following that he would then be a superior being. That doesn't mean he has to be like, you know, some sort of, you know, greatly advanced being, because that's a manifest type of impermanence. The reason why he directly realizes that is because of the fact that he directly realizes that the flame of the butter lamp is proceeding towards cessation. Yeah, so that's what for him is the meaning of this impermanence. Because the way something appears in the aspect of impermanence is none other than its way of appearing in the aspect of proceeding towards cessation. So just like I said earlier, yeah. So the impermanence is, like you can see, is going to, you know, it's going to disappear. It's going to disintegrate. It's proceeding towards disintegration. So that's You know, that's what you're realizing when you're realizing something's impermanent. So you have to establish that if it's a product, it's necessarily impermanent on the butter lamp. But the butter lamp is this sort of slightly easier example where the thing's going as manifest. Yeah. So the butter lamp, yeah, that's just got to just proceeding towards disintegration. It's going to vanish in the next kind of instant. So then you when you've got that confidence, you can see that everything's like that when you start to think about it. Even things that seem to persist from moment to moment to moment to moment, like without changing, in fact, they're only abiding by changing all the time. You know, or such as us, you know, we seem to be, you know, if I see somebody here, you know, like Roger or something, I come see him tomorrow, you know, I'll just think, oh, that's the guy I met yesterday. You know, and just sort of grasping at the permanence is the same person. But Roger has only survived from, you know, yesterday until today, till I see him again, just by going through this process of continual change. You know, just every moment that's produced of him just vanishes away, and a new one arises in its place. Now, isn't that actually the case? Indeed, you know, this aspect of combustion, you know, it's very much part of what we're doing, isn't it? We're eating all this food. It's only carbohydrate. It's only the same type of food as the fuel of a butter lamp, isn't it? It's only like hydrocarbon just getting, you know, burnt up. So that's going on in our cells all the time. So this very process that you can identify in the sort of, you know, this transience of the flame, it's just going on in our cells all the time. Exactly, yeah. So you on the easier manifest example, you establish that there is this inviolable relationship. You know, if it is a product, it's got to be impermanent. You know, if it is a smoke, it's got to have been produced from fire. That's a cause and effect relationship. The effect is, you know, dependent upon that cause. If that cause is not there, the effect won't take place. But in the case of products and impermanence, they're not cause and effect. They're two aspects of the nature of one phenomenon. You know, so if it is produced, if it has been produced from causes, if it's a product, then necessarily it is impermanent. So any phenomenon has one of those, it will have the other. You know, those two of them. If a phenomenon is in the nature of one, it's also in the nature of the other. If it's in the nature of having been produced from causes, it's just, you know, completely just decaying all the time, disintegrating. Falling away from what it is, becoming something else. Yeah. So it transfers. Once you've got it on one subject, you realize this relationship it is. It's you understand the nature of a relationship between two different aspects, two different things. And then you can see that all phenomena, that relationship just pervades, you know, wherever this one is found and that one's found. So then, yeah. Even though the pot persists in appearing to our gross, you know, confused consciousness as permanent when we look at it, you know, still it maintains that appearance, but underneath we know, kind of when we think about it, that it is actually not impermanent, not permanent at all. It's completely impermanent. So the appearance and the reality of the thing, we know they're different. We know there's some, it's not how it appears. So then we can cut off our attachment to it. We can cut off our surprise and horror, or, you know, grief or something when it breaks, or, you know, turns into something else, or smashes, or whatever. We're no longer so sort of, you know, sort of so attached to it. But you can see there's a lot of argument there, isn't there? You know, to know all swans are white, do you have to know? Well, you can't know all swans are white because they're not all white, you see. So some people say if it's a swan, it's necessarily white, that there's an inviolable relationship there. But then, you know, they go to the other side of the world and they find there are black ones. Well, you've got all crows are black, but there are albino crows. So their feathers are white. So, you know, it's not a question of going through all the examples and checking them all one by one, you know, every example of smoke and finding that they're all one by one, checking out that they're all come from fire. And then you can say, oh, if it's a product, it's necessarily impermanent. Or, you know, if it's a smoke, it necessarily comes from fire. You can't go through all the examples. But still, they're saying you can really, like, you can get sort of an ascertainment of that relationship without having to go through every example. So it's, you know, you can see how you might debate for a long time on that. People have got a good way of questioning, yeah? But what is the difference then? Okay, we've talked a little bit about the butter lamp, so then we should now meditate on sound, because that's the sort of the next sort of, you know, up, the next slightly harder one in the gradation, let's say. So we'll do that before lunch, have a good meditation on sound. But as we said last month, you know, if you think of sound being produced by your own voice, oh, like that, you see? So, what's the cause of that sound? What's the cause of the sound ah when you go ah like that? Is it a product? Is it produced from causes? Yes. So what produces the sound of a human voice? Yeah, the vocal cords are vibrating, flapping, aren't they? They're not actually chords, really. That's probably a wrong description, isn't it? They're more like two pieces, isn't it? Just two pieces of skin like that, like when you have a piece of grass in your thumbs and you blow, like you've got something that starts vibrating. Isn't it? It's more like the voice box has got these two bits of... Well, I don't know what it is. Sinew, is it? Sinew, is that the right word? Sinew, whatever. Flesh of some kind, yeah. Cartilage, I would say. Cartilage? Or do you only get that in your joints? I don't know. And then you're pushing this air up from your lungs, aren't you? So you must have air. And then these two start to vibrate. So then you've got sound. Oh, you know, like the Sanskrit alphabet, they all say every sound comes from ah, don't they? Or ah is the original sound. Just when your mouth's open, your mouth is relaxed, everything else, throat, and you're just going ah. If you're learning Sanskrit, the teacher has everybody just saying that sound, don't they? Ah. Schwa, is it? So, before you sound the Sanskrit alphabet, you have to sort of just go around, sit around, and say ah, like that. R-E-U, you know, the A-I, O-R, you know, go through all the vowels, then you do the consonants. So you can see, as soon as you stop breathing, as soon as you stop letting breath out, then the sound stops. So no more cause, no more effect. Sounds very similar to the butter lamp being like that. You can see it easily, can't you? Well, relatively easily. As soon as you finish the cause, in the next moment, the effect ceases. Yeah. So the breath is the cause, and the sound is the effect. So if this moment of breath produces that moment of sound, and that's absolutely simultaneous, isn't it? The sound ceases, so the breath ceases, and the sound begins. You know, the breath passes into the vocal cords. So it's something like that, you know. It's not quite the same, is it? Like the fuel ceases and the flame begins, but you wouldn't say the breath ceases and the sound begins. Because the breath is passing through the vocal cords, so it's not quite the same, is it? As soon as you cut off the sound, then as soon as you cut off the breath, the sound ceases, doesn't it? So there's that kind of cause and effect. So how does that differ from something like the pot or our body or the flower? Do you see any difference? Yeah, you can say, well, the pot goes on, doesn't it? The potter makes the pot. But the pot doesn't just vanish in the next moment, does it? Or the, you know, the
bed. No, I didn't.
Even if you're not eating or something, or if you're not breath, it doesn't mean your body just goes out of existence. Or does it? So what's the difference between things like the body and the pot on the one hand, sound on the bottom up on the other hand? Yeah, so, but how are they more subtle? I mean, it's harder to realize the impermanence of pot than it is the impermanence of the last moment of the butter lamp or the sound. Yeah, that's what we need to think about now. So coming down to the bottom of these verses, is this continuum of similar type or not? That's the question. So there's impermanence of subtle kind, impermanence of gross type. Continuum of similar type. So if you take an object like the butter lamp, it goes from light to dark. Yeah, so the last moment of the butter lamp finishes, and then you plunge into darkness, if it's a night time, of course. So it's like, obviously, you know, you've got very obvious sort of change. And if you take a pot and you smash it, you drop the pot out of the window of a high building, you know the pot's going to smash. So you can tell that it's going to break before it happens. You know, you can see it going down to smash on the concrete. And then when the pot breaks, you just got the fragments. So it's like the pot, while it's in its you know, whole state like this, every moment that's being produced is very much like the one before. So that's what we mean by continuum of a similar type. So the pot indeed changes, but it just produces something that is very similar to the moment that went before. And that moment immediately disintegrates and produces another moment. And another moment. And then it's not like gappy, like this moment lasts for a tenth of a second and then it disintegrates. And then another moment is produced for a tenth of a second, remains static, and that disintegrates. It's a continual thing, but to talk about it, it seems like you have to talk in moments, doesn't it? You know, so every moment that's being produced from the last moment is just very similar to the last moment. Generally speaking, in the case of a pod, isn't it? So we talk about substantial cause, the cause which produces, the cause which becomes the pot. Yeah? So the first moment of the pot, oh yes, that changes, it goes out of existence. And what does it produce? It produces the next moment of the pot. So we have this sort of, we talk about the substantial cause or something. Yeah. So the potter who's making the pot, right, you know, does he become the pot? When the potter makes a pot, a clay pot, does he become the pot? No. And the wheel he makes the pot on, does the wheel become the pot? No. So what becomes the pot? The clay. So the clay is like the substantial cause of the pot. Substantial cause of the first moment of the pot. So the clay becomes the pot. Right? But the pot and the clay, they're of a dissimilar type. The pot is, the clay is sort of grey-coloured, or it's powdery, or it's, you know, it's brittle, or it's, you know, it's kind of, you know, won't hold water. If you pour water into it, it will just sort of, you know, kind of melt into a lump. But the pot, once it's finished, you know, that will hold water. It will be sort of hard, and you know, it's not so easy to just crumble. So, you know, you've got a gross change there from clay to pot. And then when you take the pot again and smash it, then you, instead of having this sort of symmetrical shape, you just got broken bits, right? So when the clay changes into a pot, that's not a continuation of the same type, right? The clay becomes something different from what it was. But when you have, when the first moment of the pot becomes the second moment of the pot, or the second moment of the pot becomes the third moment of the pot, then all those substantial cause, substantial effect, substantial cause, substantial effect, they're all similar type, aren't they? Similar in the sense that to an ordinary person who looks at it, it looks, you know, quite the same. It looks, it's maintaining its nature of being a pot, right? And then when you smash it, of course, then the continuum of similar type comes to an end, and you have, you know, something new arises that's completely different, and then you say, oh, that's not a pot anymore. That's just broken bits. They couldn't hold water. So in the case of the pot, the similar type is just like those moments when the substantial cause and the substantial effect, it just look the same to the ordinary person. So they can say, oh yes, that's a pot, that's a pot. So it's a continuum of similar type, you see. So what that substantial cause, the first moment of what produces, its substantial effect, second moment of the pot, is very similar to the first. So it's hard to say that that's impermanent for our gross consciousness. We have this overlay of permanence, you know, we have this sort of grasping of permanence which has come from beginning its life. So we kind of, you know, can't pick up on these subtle differences. And what it was in the first moment is quite similar to what it was in the second moment. Products is you know, quite subtle. There's not much difference between them. Oh, we make the mistake of thinking they're the same. But is the flame like that? Is the butter lamp like that? Is the flame of the butter lamp, or is sound like that? Well, definitely each one has to be looked at individually, yeah. So we won't assume anything that's true of the flame is going to be true of fire. Yeah, we can maybe see some differences, definitely. So what we're saying about the flame is that there is no continuum of similar type. Now you can say, oh yeah, well, the first mode of flame is quite like the second mode. If there's a steady flame there with no breeze, so what's the problem? But you've got to look at it from this idea of substantial cause creating substantial effect. So what's the substantial cause of the flame? What is the thing that becomes the flame? The fuel. So the fuel is just liquid, carbohydrate, you know, kerosene, or you know, paraffin wax that's melted, or butter oil sort of thing. So that becomes flame, they say. So that's quite different. You see, that's a dissimilar type. Now that little tiny drop of fuel, whichever it is, it becomes that flame.
Thank you.
Right.
Yeah.
very tiny moment. But the flame immediately, you know, as soon as it's produced, it goes out. The fuel that produces it is just exhausted, so it's you know, finished. So if you want a moment of flame, you need another moment of fuel. You need more fuel. Yeah. So every moment you've got the fuel. It's a new moment of fuel that passes into flame. If you want a second moment of flame, you have to have a second moment of fuel. And a third moment of flame, you have to have a third moment of fuel.
Toby,
so it's not like flame moment number one is becoming number two, is it? Flame moment number one doesn't transform into flame number two. Flame moment number two, does it? Flame number two doesn't give up its steam. If you want flame moment number two, then you have to have more fuel. So it's always a case of flame coming from another moment of fuel. See what I mean? So the flames have got no continuity of similar type.
My shirt, because
fuel is different from the flame is different from the smoke. So that
has the
continuum of similar type, we say. It's not the same as the pot, is it? The first moment of pot becomes the second moment of pot. Even 5 years later, somebody can see me and they still recognize me, even though I have got. Still a continuation of similar type. But flame's not like that. Every moment of flame just. It doesn't produce another moment of flame. It doesn't isn't the substantial cause. And what about sound, yeah? Does first moment of sound become the second moment of sound?
Yeah,
but in terms of production, you can see that if you want another moment of sound, you have to produce another moment. You have another moment of air going through your vocal cords, don't you? So it's like air producing sound, air producing, breathing out, exhaling, producing sound, exhaling, producing sound, exhaling, producing sound.
It doesn't know, it's not typical of him, certainly.
But it is slightly different, yeah, because the sound...
Is he still there? Spitting image. Now
the air is destroyed in producing the sound. The sound is like a vibration, it's like a state of the air, isn't it? Where pressure waves have been set up. So it's the air in a sort of different format or something. So it's
going to
be different. It's a different.
Remember the Cruel Sea?
Yeah.
One of his first films, the Parthenon. So obviously he's had his head, whatever they call it. Is that William Russell?
It is.
Well, I'll be buggered.
And he's still going very strong.
But you see that. If there is a continuum of similar type, then it becomes harder to see the subtle impermanent. So your obvious example.
It was terrible. I saw an interview with his widow, Virginia Everett, who said that he literally had stopped
every moment of, you know, the substance, whatever it is, for instance, flame, has to be produced from the new moment of its cause.
So it's a bit peaky to that.
Not the third.
It's more easy to see, get that sense of, yes.
Yeah. He's a lovely fella.
Did EastEnders, he cropped up in EastEnders.
Really, really lovely. Oh, lovely. I saw Sylvia Sim recently, of course, she's an old lady now. Mm. A beautiful, beautiful creature.
Why? Well, everything that... So is that true then? You convinced by that, Stuart? Well, look, that is a physical explanation, yeah. Well, it's the pressure wave travelling through the air, isn't it? So, yeah, some of these scientific explanations can be quite helpful. But they do have an extra... gives you extra things to think about. Yeah, so that's a wave of pressure passing through the air. But it's not like one molecule of air comes from my mouth and hits your ear. Well, that's another question, yeah. Is it sound before it hits your ear, you know? Well, that's going on to the sort of more emptiness side, yeah. That, yeah, you can see how even sound is dependent upon observer, observing it. If there's no observer who knows what sound is or, you know, has an ear to receive those pressures on the eardrum, then how can you talk about sound? But this is a question, is it sound before it hits your ear, you see? So that's not something I would necessarily agree with, that it's not sound until it reaches your eardrum. But that's not going off the subject of impermanence, I think. But yeah, you see, there's a lot to debate about, a lot to think about. You know, somebody can come along and say, look, the thing's produced. And yes, if you sort of scratch it with a, you know, with the sort of the edge of the sink or something while you're cleaning it, or if you knock it against something, it develops tiny cracks. Okay, so when the outside external cause comes along, then it does change, and it sort of gets a bit older, and a bit more worn, a bit chipped. But in a situation where there's no external causes of influencing it, then it's remaining static, you know? Then it doesn't change. Some people might be arguing like that. So if you go through these, in this section of dispelling objections, so you find people, and other sections in the text, people are trying to say that, yeah, your disintegration depends upon external causes. If there aren't any of those, then it just remains as it is, like not moving, not changing. So that's a sort of, you know, you have to think, well, maybe there's something in that, you know. If you've got something really solid and strong, like a steel cup or something like that, you know, stainless steel mug, you know, why should it change when there's no fluctuations in its environment? So is this thing about impermanence kind of true of all products? Or? That's why you have to go away and meditate on these things. Or go to the debating ground, debate upon them. So the Dalai Lama was right to serve that tea, was he? With the man who drowned in it. You just said outside that you thought that it was right that the Dalai Lama should serve the tea and not waste it. even though the guy had drowned in the tea. Yeah, we have all these debates that come up in the class, you see. absolutely dynamic, yeah. The whole universe. There's nothing, nowhere you can go to find stasis or, you know, kind of things stop affecting each other. That's very much the Buddhist idea of universe is that they grow and die, isn't it? You know, they arise and cease. Yeah, I mean, I wonder about that. Sure. Like you say with the, if you say, the example one teacher gave me was like you drop a sugar lump into your tea, and if you take a slow motion film of that and then slow it down, you can see all these little droplets coming up and separating off and jumping in the air and then just slowly coming back into the tea. So even the whole complex sort of, you know, forms that that tea takes as it jumps into the air, you know. So he was giving that an example as the way we are, you know, confused or, you know, we're dull towards the total impermanence of all phenomena. So then, you know, why are we do, why are we so, you know, unable to see the?
Then he was in his own recently, and he was inside. Moved there in the mid-80s. He had been all over. He was born in Sinan.
Maybe read this part.
So were you supposed to go to cricket today?
No, I went Thursday at the stuff, it was so cold, the cricket was dreary, so I left at 3. No, I'm not sure what I might be, I was doing the earlier.
And then where it says, oh, 358 in the margin, there's a verse, then the next paragraph underneath that. Some may think. Somebody else is bringing in another
objection. Oh, is that an attachment?
One may think, no way is it tenable that the mode of being of functioning things is moment by moment and created disintegrating. Some functioning things like mountains and so forth, we directly see and remain starkly
That's
his example, mountain, you see. Some things are just completely permanent. They don't change. Seeing like that is simply such as an internal cause for error, the imprints of permanent grasping, and an external cause for error, the uninterrupted sequence of similar type. So he's only giving two reasons for fault, you see. One is the imprints of permanent grasping, so there's a very much a mental thing. You know, we've just like we can't see the emptiness of phenomena, we grasp at them to have nature from their own side.
Yeah. And he just gets frustrated by house.
Okay, that's the East Meadow miracle. It must be careful. So that's where he gets ready. So the rest of us should get some work done. And we should get strong, get on with it.
Well, you had a stroke quite long. You can have it from the
universe,
right?
Yeah, I've
had it.
I
want
the imprints of permanent grasping with grasp permanence so long for so many times that our mind is habitually addicted to doing that. So it's like we're inborn, it's inborn. So we have to sort of meditate really strongly to overcome that. And then the external cause of error is the other. But the changes are there, but we don't see them. So we
it's these women, you see, they do it.
But in fact, it is still impermanent. But the illusion is because the object goes on arising in the next moment, quite similar to what it was before. So he's just giving those two as the cause for the not seeing that, being unable to see that the mountain is impermanent.
Well, it's the size of a bloody house, I see. It's a picture.
Well, I'm not curious thing, isn't it?
I suppose if you're drunk all of the time, it exacerbates it.
If you're drunk all of the time, it exacerbates it.
Yeah, no answer. I've tried that, actually. Unfortunately, it's still there in the morning.
Yeah.
I drink blackcurrant cordial, and I normally have it in a pint glass, because I'm not a glass of wine now again, or whatever. But I normally drink this blackcurrant cordial in a wine glass, and the woman said to me, "What are you doing?" I said, "Rosé." Fucking great glass, fine glass of this stuff. Well, she said, "You like drink from me?" I said, "Jeez, I'd never stop." I said, "You want to get out of here in half an hour, I get nasty." I'm trying to work it out here, because years ago, one or two people, when you were young, they thought you had to get drunk all the time, then you'd become a great actor like Richard Burton. But he was going to be a great actor. O'Toole was going to be. And they really did think that you had to be pissed all the time before you did.
You see that comedians, because I'm breaking, I'm a stand-up when you see some.
Sorry, I'm...
It happens with comedians, I'm a stand-up comic.
Oh, brilliant.
And you get youngsters who see Johnny Vegas or something, and they go, "Oh, if I'm pissed, I'll be funny." Yeah. And if you're pissed, you're only funny to yourself.
There must have been one in my head.
Get away with it.
You can't just have that 2 pints of Guinness. You're going to have to have 2 3 pints.
Oh, well, it's difficult to afford it. I was in Manchester. And Pete Postlethwaite was in the...
So if we then visualize or imagine or invite the wisdom beings before us, the enlightened beings, whatever tradition, or if we are, you know, especially trying to get the wisdom of the Buddhist tradition, then the Buddhist masters in whom we developed faith, the great ones of the past, indivisible with our teachers of the present. Or if we're not comfortable with the visualization, then just feel the presence of the Buddhas, you know, their benign presence, wishing to inspire us. So the Buddha, the one who gave these great teachings, and the Dharma, the teachings themselves, and also included within the Dharma jewel are the realizations, especially the realization of emptiness. So these are also an object of refuge, that beings have reached these realizations, so they're able to give teachings from this sort of advanced wisdom, and then the possibility that is within us, our potential, and in the future to have these realizations ourselves. So we can take refuge in that, our Buddha potential, that we too have.
So before we started rolling about unusual for natural regeneration that you didn't do a lot of the weekly rep of
shakeable in their realizations now. They no longer depend upon the reasoning, but have had the direct insight, which brings them to a very advanced level. Not wishing to do this just for ourselves, but may we cultivate those advanced realizations, develop our compassion, develop our concern for others, that we too reach the state of Buddhahood for the sake of all. So this bodhicitta motivation, let's try our meditation with this highest of all kind of aspiration, the aspiration that we become enlightened too, sake of all beings who need it, sake of all beings we can help. So let's say the refuge and bodhicitta prayer then.
Sangye chidam sogi cho nama janchu badu dagni kapsu chi dagi chinyin vipa sonam ki drola penche sangye drupa shok Sangye chidam sogi cho nama janchu badu dagni kapsu chi dagi chinyin vipa sonam ki Rola penche sangye drupa shok Sangye chidam sogi cho namba Janchu bodhu dani kapsu chi Dagi che shegi pe so nam ki Rola penche sangye drupa shok
So let's just think for a moment about a grosser level of impermanence, and then we'll go to the subtle level we've been talking about. So let's just all contemplate the fact that, you know, this is a precious opportunity now for us to try to gain insight into the Buddha's teachings, but it's a very limited opportunity in the sense that, you know, it will quickly be curtailed, so that our life in this world, it'll be made more, sort of, we'll make better use of it, we'll be sort of more keenly aware of the way things really are when we remember that we are going to die and that, you know, that could happen at any time. So that's just a very sensible thing to remember every day. That anything that is born, anything that has life, must die. And a death can come at any time. It doesn't just come when the fuel runs out. It can come by, you know, the process of life just being interrupted catastrophically by interfering conditions. So it's good just to mention, to think about that for a moment or two. That would be an obvious example, gross impermanence. But now we have to try to think of impermanence going on at a subtler level than that, a more momentary level. So we can think about, first of all, that last moment of the flame. See how you know, the cause we produce, it finishes. Then it's in an infinitesimal moment later, just passes away, and its causes are exhausted, so it must too just pass away. Go out. So from that we get the sense that any time you look at the flame, any time that you look back over the burning of the lamp, that the flame that you're looking at has just arisen. It's just arisen like from its own, you know, causal fuel. Just in the very instant you're looking at it, it's just arisen from its causes. So every moment of that flame newly arises. It's very much a case of, you know, impermanence coming clearer to the mind when we think like that. So then we can think about the sound of the voice, sound of a trumpet, some suitable sound like that. Again, we can see that every in a moment of sound we hear, it's been newly produced from a new moment of breath, sort of passing through the instrument, or passing through the throat. So again, there's no question but that sound is like a new in every moment. As soon as the breath stops, then the sound stops. Not a new moment of sound, you have to have a new moment of breath, or a new moment of production, new causes. New substantial cause. So sound too is just momentary, moment by moment, created, disintegrated. Now what about our bodies? Third thing, last thing now. Is it the same? passing away in every moment. Whatever is there in the first, in the second moment, changed. You know? Everything that was there in the first moment has changed, vanished away, and become something new in the second moment. Is that, are we like that, or I just think about our bodies? As you like, your body, your mind, yourself. Are we just sort of passing away from moment to moment, just thoroughly momentary like that? So there's nothing that's persisting without changing there. Thoroughly unstable, you're tempted to say. Every moment it arises newly. Is that how it is? Okay, well, we better stop there. Take a break for lunch. So we dedicate the merit. All the efforts we've done go to, you know, best possible outcome, not just for, you know, a good deed leading to happiness, ripening in samsara, and that's the end of it, but the good deed going towards our future enlightenment. So that it has the maximum benefit for benefiting others too. So we become capable of, you know, really understanding these subjects, leading others on a path which leads all the way to the end of suffering. Stop there. Thank you. Shall we come back just after 2 o'clock? And maybe have a little discussion then?